Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Some Christians wonder if boycotting businesses is really biblical, and that's a fair question. Ed Vitagliano and M.D. Perkins address that subject in depth in the AFA Cultural Institute video, Stewardship in Action, The Power of the Boycott. They share the purpose of boycotts and show how they can impact the culture. We're giving that DVD to you free as our thanks for supporting AFA this month. Go to AFA.net today for more details. AFA.net.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, October 15th, and yesterday afternoon on the White House Rose Garden lawn, President Trump presented posthumously to Charlie Kirk the Medal of Freedom, which, as you know, is the highest civilian honor that can be awarded in the United States. And President Trump was very almost emotional. It was actually quite something to see him remembering his friend Charlie Kirk and talking about the Medal of Freedom and saying that, you know, it is something that is a presidential decision, but it's still something that you have to earn and you have to merit, unlike what some of the people that Joe Biden bestowed it on. But anyway, what Trump was saying, though, was that you actually have to merit it and it means something. And I think that he brought a lot of dignity back to that ceremony and was talking about why Charlie Kirk really did love his country and earn the Medal of Freedom. Listen to this. This is cut three.
Charlie grew Turning Point into the largest conservative youth organization in the entire country. He forged a personal bond with countless young conservatives. He fought for free speech, religious liberty, strong borders, and a very strong and proud America. In everything he did, he put America first. He really put America first. And ultimately, Charlie became more than a leader of an important organization. He became the leader of historic movements all over the country. There were movements, individual movements, one movement. But it was historic. Everything he did was historic.
And President Trump also called Charlie a true American hero. This is cut four.
But instead, Charlie is attaining a far more important milestone. We're entering his name forever into the eternal roster of true American heroes. He's a true American hero, an amazing person, way, way beyond his years.
And it's so true. And he did grow that organization, Turning Point to USA, to inspire so many thousands, and it's millions probably now, of young people to engage not just in the conservative political movement, but to actually think critically and understand why politics matters from a biblical worldview. And one of those young people that got to know Charlie from a very, very young age and was inspired by him personally is Brylan Hollihand, who joins me now. And Brylan, I'm sure that you saw the ceremony yesterday. And good morning. And I know that this has been, you know, really difficult 5 weeks for you as well, because you knew Charlie personally.
Jenna, good morning to you. Happy Wednesday. I greatly appreciate the opportunity. It's always an honor to be on your show with your incredible audience. And you're right. It's a crazy, dark-seeming time in our country. But what I want to be really clear is exactly what Erica said yesterday is, you know, what man meant for evil, the Lord is using for good. And in a situation like this, you know, It is heartbreaking, and it is incredibly hard, and we should probably still be in a fetal position on the floor upset somewhere. But we're not, because we had the hope and love of Jesus Christ. And it's incredible that Charlie got this award yesterday, and nobody deserves it more. Nobody has inspired our generation more. I mean, we need to get past the days of giving a medal like this with such high honor to a movie star because he had a really good film, but to somebody like Charlie, who genuinely inspired the next generation to get off the sidelines. And he's constantly been referred to the past 5 weeks like a modern day founding father. And Jenna, like, that's spot on. But what I want to be really clear this morning with your audience is, you know, I believe that Charlie is smiling out a window in heaven this morning, not because he got some medal with his name etched in it, but because he has seen lives change and be surrendered to the Lord all across this country in an effort of revival. Like, genuinely, what we're seeing is revival. That's what's making Charlie happy, that he has fellow brothers and sisters now to claim in Christ, not just because he got some award. And so, yes, this is great, and yes, it's an incredible worldly thing, but also the kingdom change that we've seen in just 5 weeks you've touched on is incredible, Jenna.
Yeah, and that really is at the heart of what Charlie's work was and the work that we still carry on as Christians. And I posted yesterday, right before the ceremony, Charlie should be there to receive the Medal of Freedom. He fought tirelessly for this nation, which he loved, but he has received his eternal reward and the crown of martyrs from Christ, which is of so much more value than anything earthly anyone, even a president, could bestow. And that was a similar line of thought, Brylan, that, this really, for Charlie, it wasn't just about politics. It was ultimately about the mission of Christ. And I think that that there is a concern that young people right now in it, who are seeing kind of have seen the rise of the MAGA movement, have seen the rise of the America First movement, and they're engaging in politics, which is great, and they're engaging in the conservative movement, even the Republican Party, and so forth, still somehow see that disconnect. And they don't really connect the dots between, I am a Christian, therefore, this is my political persuasion, that conservatism can't have a definition without an eternal lawgiver and an objective moral truth. And yet they don't really connect those dots. And they say that they're conservative, meaning America First instead of Christian first. And so where do you think ultimately this movement goes to fulfill not just Charlie's vision? I mean, this obviously was well before Charlie, continue on his work for the purpose of Jesus Christ.
You know, Jenna, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. I'm very, bold on these campuses that we're speaking at right now by simply saying I'm a Christian first and a conservative second. And that annoys some people. And I've had some frustrating texts the past few days of people saying, why do you talk about God so much? Like, why do you constantly always quote these scriptures on these campuses and these college students? You should be asking them to register to vote, and you should be plugging donor links. And that's genuinely not my intention. Like, I have no intention to go to these campuses and just strictly put political propaganda down the throats of my peers. Yes, I would love if every single campus that we go speak at, people join the Republican Party and go register to vote. That's awesome, Jenna. But what we genuinely want on these campuses is for souls to be won over by the kingdom. And that's what we're trying to, have come through this movement and have come through this tragedy, is genuine revival on these campuses. And so we have a fork in the road right now with the Gen Z movement, where we could go down this ideology of strictly political, cynical, worldly point of view, where it's me first, let's be extremely selfish, or we could surrender and be selfless and surrender ourselves at the feet of the Lord and say, we're here to do your work. And we're here, whatever political party supports and aligns with your morals and values is who we're supporting. And right now, that's the Republican Party. It has been the Republican Party. And hopefully, it maintains being the Republican Party for, centuries to come to carry out Charlie's legacy. But I want to be really clear that in no way am I beholden to any candidate with a specific letter beside their name just because they have that letter. But I'm beholden to candidates that actually support the Christian conservative beliefs that you've talked about right here on the show. That's what Gen Z should support. That's what Gen Z should stand behind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, you've done this amazing, and you're in the midst of this amazing campus tour where you're going and actually doing what Charlie did and following in his footsteps by speaking directly to Gen Z and to the next generation and having these discussions on campus. And that's what Charlie loved so much and I think is so necessary to just have this dialogue and have these conversations so that it's not just conservative speaking at young people. It's really engaging with their questions and being ready for answers. And so as you're doing this campus tour, Brylan, what do you see as the maybe greatest challenge in reaching the next generation? You know, what do you see as maybe the greatest obstacle with people who have questions, but they're just not quite ready yet to embrace Christ and to understand the conservative movement?
You know, first I'll just say what you said exactly of, you know, we're not going and lecturing, we're going and having conversations is the most important part of all of this. You know, Kamala's campaign had this consultant's fever dream made up in a lab strategy of how to win Gen Z. Like, it should have worked in theory. On paper, her strategy of standing next to Taylor Swift and Beyonce, using joy as a catchphrase for her campaign and posting on TikTok should have won her the White House, right? But it didn't because she screamed at Gen Z. She didn't talk with Gen Z. President Trump and I went to college campuses and had conversations. We walked in the student section together at Bratton and he said to me, he threw hot dogs with students. Like, he had genuine interactions on campuses, not through a phone screen, and that's how he won. And that's how we're having conversation today. The tour with 10 Turning Point chapters is called One Conversation at a Time. The whole point of this is to talk with Gen Z. But I'll tell you, the number one concern, the number one fear, the number one holdup that I keep seeing with my peers is them genuinely being concerned about the fact that they're going to get pushback and hate. And they look at me as an example of saying, oh, whoa, Brylan, who's been doing this since 11 years old in the fourth grade, is having hundreds of thousands of people attack him, pick apart his life, pick apart his family, call him on campuses. Like, if he's losing friends and supporters and you're having professors be upset with him, why would I stick my neck out there? And so that's like the number one thing that we constantly hear. I heard it just this last week. This week we're at Mississippi State and Clemson and Liberty. We're going to constantly continue to hear these concerns from Gen Z that are valid. Yes, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's scary. Yes, Jenna, you know better than anybody. This fight is in no way easy, but it's important. And the people that we're losing, friends that I might not have any more, professors that might be upset with me because of where I stand politically, I stand on my Christian conservative convictions 7 days a week, every single day, because it's that important.
And I'm so grateful that you are doing that. I'm speaking with Brylan Hollihan. You can follow him and I encourage you to do that at Brylan Hollihan on X. And he's on all the other social media platforms as well. And, you know, you're right that that there is a lot of pushback. And if you stand up for something, then you will inevitably have opposition. And there are a lot of people who, frankly, just don't have that same kind of backbone, especially at your age. And that's something that is difficult, especially when you see, I mean, we can assume, and we would assume, that people who disagree with us, who aren't Christians or who aren't conservatives, who aren't Trump supporters, et cetera, that they would disagree with us. But it's different when the opposition comes from within. And you faced a lot of that recently with people saying, well, you know, you'll never be like Charlie, which I don't think you're trying to be. I think you're trying to model and continue his work. But what is that? What has that been like to have, you know, the opposition come from what should be the very people who are championing you?
You know, what's frustrating, Jenna, is that the same people that stand on their pedestal behind a wall on social media screaming that the next generation should get involved are the same ones that tear down a college freshman who wants to get involved. They constantly say that we need more conversations on college campuses, that we need people to sacrifice time to go to these campuses. Yet when I finish classes and go to a college campus, you know, several days a week to speak to people, I'm the one getting the arrows, you know, attacks from our side. And it's frustrating, but it's definitely not going to stop me. If anything, I think my relationship with Jesus Christ has grown closer in the past, you know, what, 2 or 3 weeks of this insane attacks. than it's ever been before. And we are having more people come up to our campus stops than ever before. The very first time that I ever spoke at a Turning Point chapter a few years ago, one singular student showed up, Jenna. It was me and one student. It was super intimate. And now we're having like 500 students pack ballrooms. That's nothing about me. That's the movement. Like, that's saying that young people are genuinely getting involved. Even this time last year, leading up to the elections, I was going to campuses like begging people to get off the sidelines, to come out of their dorm rooms and just listen to us. Like, we were having maybe a dozen on a good day. Students want to show up on a Tuesday or Thursday night to come support, you know, a politician. Like, nobody ever wanted to, you know, get out of their college routine. And now we're having hundreds of students come out just to hear how they can get involved. That's a testament. That's what keeps me going. And haters can hate as much as they want. It's not going to stop me. But what we're seeing on campuses is what's keeping me going.
Amazing. Well, we have to break here, but Brylan Hollihan, I really appreciate your firm dedication to simply speaking truth. You are like Charlie in that. Absolutely. Keep going. And for all of the students who may be listening to this, you should have that same mentality of just simply stand up and speak truth. You don't have to necessarily grab a microphone, be in front of, you know, 500, 1,000 people like Brylan is, but you can stand for truth where you are called because you have a purpose. And the Lord has a purpose for your life. And if you are a parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, friend, anybody else who sees young people like Brylan who are standing up for truth, we should all encourage them instead of saying, well, you know, you're not doing it exactly the way that I think you should or the way that Charlie did or making these kinds of comparisons. No, we need to be encouraging the next generation to boldly stand for truth. So I stand with Brylan, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, speaking of young people and getting involved, you may have heard about this latest controversy, and you may not have. It stemmed from Politico late yesterday, and this is actually the Democrats' response to the whole Jay Jones controversy, because you'll recall, you know, Jay Jones, who's running for attorney general in Virginia, had text messages leaked that he was actually wanting the death wish of a member, I believe he's a member of the House of Representatives. I think I said earlier on the program it was his opponent, but it was actually a member of the legislature. But anyway, you know, he wanted a death wish against somebody in the Republican Party. It was utterly disgusting that an adult who is running for office has these types of vile text messages with a death wish on his political opponent and his children. I mean, this is just disgusting. And so instead of prominent Democrats actually denouncing this and maybe unendorsing Jay Jones or realizing, you know, this is someone who is disqualified for office morally, no, their response is to go after the young Republicans and leak text messages that are definitely bombastic. They definitely, you know, have some some humor in them that I would not condone. They're not great by any means, but it's not the same moral equivalency. And so Leigh Wolf, who is executive producer of the Ruthless podcast, if you ever heard that, posted this on X yesterday. Democrats' actual plan with this is Jay Jones, but what about the young Republicans? You don't get comment on the article from Schumer, Hochul, etc., on something as unfathomably stupid and irrelevant as a YR group chat unless there's a scheme. The problem with their plan is that, unlike Democrats, Republicans will readily condemn, denounce, and keep from office, while Democrats continue to endorse the murderous and violent threats from a man who isn't a random nobody, but rather their nominee for AG in Virginia. Really well said. So let's welcome in Orrin McIntyre, who's a host at The Blaze and frequent guest on the program. And Orrin, I thought that was so well put from Leigh Wolf, because this is exactly what's going on, is that, you know, Politico drops this article. And of course, the headlines are totally different, where, you know, they're saying that, you know, there were quote unquote, you know, racist messages or quote unquote, you know, vile messages from Jay Jones. Now it's, you know, I love Hitler, says the young Republicans. How dare they? And they're trying this equivalency. And a lot of Republicans are rushing to take the bait by calling for resignations, focusing on this instead of saying, okay, yeah, you know, that's bad. That's a couple of young Republicans. But Democrats, you still have to answer for your Virginia AG nominee.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that this still is lodged into the minds of so many Republicans. They think that if they just run out and they denounce and they cancel, then it will show them how principled they are in response to the Democrats. And all of a sudden, people will recognize the truth that the Republicans are the real good guys because they uphold these standards. Now, the point is, of course, that the Democrats are not going to be shamed no matter what the Republicans do. They're going to continue to run a guy who has wished death on his opponents, on the children of his opponents. None of that is going to change. The only thing you're going to do is hurt a bunch of college kids who, look, should they be saying what they're saying? Of course not. But ultimately, they are not running for office. They are not people who are going to hold the position of top law enforcement officer in Virginia. There is no comparison here. And these things happen in a context. As you said, it's very obvious that the Democrats want to throw this out as some kind of equal situation so that they can peel off the heat they're getting from continuing to support such a insane, disqualified candidate. That has to be the context here. And that's why I was very glad to see somebody like the vice president come out and say, look, we are not going to play this game. We're not going to cancel a bunch of college kids while the Democrats go out and continue to endorse someone running for office who said much, much, much worse and continued. Remember, they, you know, called up the Republican they were talking to clarify, no, I really do want these people's children dead. Like, this is not just some offhand comment the guy made joking, you know, in a group chat. This is something he said very directly to a Republican and called emphatically to reinforce and give logic as to why it was okay for him to wish death on his Republican opponents. This is not some casual joke comment. This is what he wanted to communicate to other Republicans. The situations are just not analogous, and Republicans running out to try to cancel a bunch of college kids over this is quite possibly the most dumb and, well, frankly, Republican thing they could do.
Right. And, you know, there is a Charlie Kirk tweet for everything we're learning, and one that resurfaced yesterday in the midst of this non-controversy from Charlie was, the left has never played by our rules. Only we play by our rules. Our rules are what keeps our side from winning. Either we want to win or we will lose under some delusion that the rules mean anything. And he's absolutely right, especially, I mean, this context, I think, evidences exactly what he was talking about, Orrin, and what you've talked about and what you wrote an entire book about, that conservatives are allowing the left to try to enforce our rules against us in ways that they don't actually care about. They only care about enforcing the rules against us. It's the same thing as when people on social media, if I oppose what, you know, a Democrat is doing, or I have a comment on, you know, something that, on a leftist, they'll say, oh, how unchristian of you, as if they are trying to tell me what the God that they don't even believe in requires of me, and I need to hold myself to the standard that they're imposing on God, supposedly imposing on me. I mean, and yet we fall for that almost every time.
I mean, this is just a very classic Alinskyite play, right? Like, use your opponent's principles against them. And the key here really is, it's not that you just abandon all principles, right? It's not like you wouldn't tell any of these young Republicans, hey, man, cut that out. We shouldn't talk like that, right? Like,
of course.
That's something you would tell them in person. But that is counsel, friendly counsel you would give to someone on your side, right? That would be an internal policing mechanism. The thing we have to learn, and again, this is why I'm so glad, because this is J.D. Vance has done this again, right? Remember, he did the same thing with the Doge staffer and everyone coming for the Doge staffer. He's like, no, we're hiring that guy back. We're not playing this game anymore, right? And this is another time he's done this. He's shown some wisdom, some prudence here, where he goes out and says, look, I might not like what this person said, but we will deal with it. That is for us to deal with on our side. It is not for a liberal publication to go out, run a hit piece, and then we all go, you know, we got to cancel everybody involved, run scared. No, that time is done. We're done letting the liberal media dictate when we talk about something, what we talk about. The main topic, the real focus, the real scandal, the real news event right now is the fact that Jay Jones is somebody who openly advocated for the murder of Republicans, who wanted to see his opponents dead, wanted to see his opponents' children dead, and is looking to be the AG of Virginia. That is the story. That's what matters. We're not going to let the media throw out a bunch of college Republicans in a group chat and say that this is somehow far more dangerous. It just makes no sense. We can internally say, hey, guys, that's not how we behave. Let's learn from this. Let's grow from this. You know, do better, as opposed to running out and saying, we're going to cancel everyone involved, which is exactly what the college Republicans did, the young Republicans did, which is just the worst possible move.
Yeah, so well said. And I'm speaking with Orrin McIntyre, who is host at The Blaze. You can follow him on X at Orrin McIntyre. That's A-U-R-O-N McIntyre. And I want to switch topics here as well to get your take, Orrin, on where we're at with this peace deal. I mean, it's been really amazing to put up what a lot of the rhetoric from the mainstream, lamestream media said when, they were suggesting this could never get done. And now, in the midst of the hostages being returned and President Trump actually completing this, they're kind of being forced to eat their words. And a few of them have actually given credit where credit is due. But overall, where do you see this positioning the United States and also for this peace deal in terms of its longevity for Israel?
Well, it's certainly a fantastic thing to see. And of course, the mainstream media is going to fight tooth and nail not to give credit. Let's remember that this occurred during a government shutdown. So all you have to do to get peace in the Middle East is shut down the United States government, I think, is the moral of the story here. I think that this can be a huge boon for Donald Trump. Obviously, the conflict in the Middle East was the most divisive thing, I think, both on the left and right. It was pulling way too much of the political energy that should have been focused on what was happening here domestically away. It was the thing that was probably hurting Donald Trump's approval the most at the moment. And so if he can, if he can turn that around, if that can be successful, then that takes the wind out of the sails of a lot of critics of Donald Trump, even on the right, people who, have had a larger problem with Donald Trump's handling of Israel or those kind of things. He can pull those people back on board as well, with this not being the focus. Of course, the main thing is going to be ensuring that the United States is not sucked deeper into this. There are some troops being deployed there to make sure that the peace deal is properly maintained. That's always dicey, just because, of course, if one side or the other ends up hitting a U.S. military personnel, then you can be back in some very hot water. I don't like putting our troops in harm's way in this situation. However, it does seem like that is probably the best option to ultimately extricate the United States from having to be involved in this long term. And so you kind of just have to do what you need to do in this scenario. So I think overall it's a very positive move for Donald Trump and just the country in general to no longer have to be as obsessed over this issue right now. So I'm very, very glad and hoping, ultimately praying, that this does work out positively for the country.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's wonderful that this is a resolution to, you know, what is a beyond horrific situation for these hostages, and that they finally have come home. And, you know, this has this whole concept of the United States supporting Israel, you know, you and I have talked about at length, Oren, and, you know, especially following the now infamous conversation between Ted Cruz and Tucker Carlson. And you also had a debate recently with our good friend Dinesh D'Souza. And for listeners who haven't seen that, it's out on YouTube. And it's I think you can probably just, you know, Google Dinesh D'Souza, Oren McIntyre, and this debate. And it was about an hour and a half. I listened to the whole thing. And I have to say, while both of you came from a very different position in terms of where the United States supports Israel, you know, and why, it was to me one of the more profitable debates, because I think you both approached it instead of just going to the immediate clash on actually where you agree. And then that revealed the maybe, you know, 10% that you disagreed on and why. And I think for people who are, you know, still maybe formulating their opinions on this issue, to me it was a very valuable conversation, and I appreciate you doing that. And so, you know, as we as the conservative movement overall are having that wider conversation about the United States and Israel, there's another festering conversation that I think is actually even more important that a lot of conservatives, especially the perpetually online, are not talking about as much, Oren, and this is the Qatar influence and how the Free Press recently had an article, Qatar and China are pouring billions into elite American universities, and President Trump just recently had an executive order on Qatar safety. We're seeing so much money. I mean, even now to this this military flight base that's being built in Idaho, some are calling for it being walking back. The last that I heard from Pete Hegseth, Department of War Secretary, is that's going to continue. There are a lot of problems around Qatarian influence in the United States. And regardless of whether or not it's an ally, at least Israel shares our Western values. They share our morality, the Judeo-Christian view, where Qatar is something completely different. How do you see this whole debate and why the conservatives aren't more concerned about that influence?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think that we are not sufficiently worried about foreign influence in general. I mean, we say things like we're worried about Chinese influence, but we still allow Chinese companies to buy up land in the United States, to buy real estate in the United States, we allow Chinese citizens to come here and, you know, train in our universities and spy on our corporations. And it's just very strange. We talk a lot about the dangers of foreign influence, but we don't act like we care about it at all. I of course, don't want Qatar to be involved in our politics at all. When the stories first start circulating that there was going to be some kind of Qatari airbase or something built in the U.S., I lost my top for a second, and then people are like, well, no, it's an office where they're training these guys with planes we sold them, and, you know, not as bad, but I still don't want any of that. Like, I don't want that to be what the U.S. is doing. But let's be clear, you know, Israel has been pumping lots of money to the United States for a very long time, and Qatar and China and Ukraine and all these other countries are also doing it, right? Like, this is just, unfortunately, as our status as kind of the global hegemon, we are the strongest nation in the world that dictates a lot of geopolitics. And what that means is a lot of other countries want to be directly involved and influencing what we do. And again, I'm going to keep referencing this because I think it's the most important founder speech that we've forgotten. George Washington, in his farewell address, warns us exactly of this. He says that if you favor a single nation or if you single out a nation for hatred, you are creating a scenario that will invite foreign influence, that foreign factions will form inside your government, that your citizens will war over which of the foreign factions is the right one to be loyal to, and that foreign influence is the death of a republic. He says this repeatedly. Foreign influence is the death of a republic. And so I certainly don't want to see Qatari money in the U.S., but I don't want to see Israeli money in the U.S. I want to see Chinese money in the U.S. And honestly, I don't think any of our politicians are acting like they want to expel any of this money, because all of them keep taking it. All of them keep setting up sweetheart deals for these different countries, their different influence. And so I think this is just a problem across the board. I'm as worried about Qatar as I am about China or Israel. I don't want any of these countries ultimately influencing the domestic policy of the United States.
Yeah, and I agree with you to an extent. I mean, I think that, you know, where money flows, then strings are attached and obligations. I mean, we see the same problem with the federal government to the states, right? I mean, this is why those of us who are constitutional conservatives are calling for less federal government influence into the states. I mean, for exactly the same reasons that you just described. And yet I see a bigger problem and not an equivalency between Israel versus Qatar and China. I mean, while we could say, you know, broadly, yes, it's a concern with any foreign nation pouring their money into the United States, I see a greater problem with Qatar and China versus someone like Israel, who actually is an ideological ally, where Qatar and China clearly are not. And so I would not go as far as to put them on the same playing field.
I mean, they're not exactly the same thing, but the influence, foreign influence, I think is just deleterious across the board. So obviously, I don't think China and Israel are the same country. And, you know, you're probably geopolitically more advantageous with Israel at certain times than you are China. But ultimately, I just would prefer not to see any of this money flowing in to the U.S. So I just think we should be wary across the board. And again, like, this is not to underplay the threat from Qatar or China. I don't want either of those countries influencing our nation, but we should just get serious about reducing foreign influence across the board. We should be cutting off lobbying opportunities. We should be ensuring that these countries don't have the ability to purchase or influence organizations or businesses or property inside the United States. I just don't understand why we would allow any nation. You know, when the UK Labour government was sending people over to help the Democrats and the Kamala Harris campaign, we should have been just as angry at the UK as we would be at Qatar or Israel or Ukraine or anyone else. We should have the same standard across the board. I don't want Vladimir Putin or Benjamin Netanyahu or, you know, whoever the head of Qatar is to be, you know, influencing my domestic politics. I don't want Keir Starmer influencing my domestic politics. I don't want these people being involved in the U.S. in its domestic politics at all. I think that's just a great blanket rule. No matter how we feel about the country, it should not be funding influence operations in the United States, period.
Well, we got to take a break here, but we'll have to have you back on, Oren, to discuss this more, because I appreciate that. And I agree with you insofar as, you know, we should not be beholden to other nations in terms of allowing their funding or their influence to dictate our foreign policy, or especially to raise our next generation. I mean, that is the main problem with a lot of this Qatari funding, is that it's going to these elite universities, and we're seeing how they have been so captured by a leftist ideology that is completely antithetical to America's founding and to what America is all about in terms of our values. So that is, I think, the biggest threat in terms of where we are allowing a lot of this foreign influence to go. I mean, not just foreign policy and how we deal with other nations, but how they're actually changing and capturing the minds of America's youth. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, the government shutdown continues to drag on, and the Fox News headline is Trump is using the government shutdown to do something no president has ever done. The shutdown continues as federal layoffs begin nationwide. And so the article goes on to say President Donald Trump, the negotiator in chief, isn't blinking. He's swinging the axe at bloated Democrat-run bureaucracies that have taken trillions from hardworking Americans for decades, while Nancy Pelosi and her party claim "quote unquote" chaos, and Trump is turning crisis into clarity, freezing $26 billion in blue state pork, halting green energy pet projects, and directing departments to prepare reduction in force plans as part of a broader review of spending and accountability. So those plans are now in motion. The Office of Management and Budget confirmed that federal layoffs have begun, with cuts underway in health, homeland security, and commerce. Washington calls it chaos, and the writer says, I call it a cleanup, a reckoning long overdue in the deep state swamp. For the first time in modern history, a shutdown isn't about stalling. It's about a president reshaping Washington for the people. So let's welcome in Chris Ekstrom, who is a board member of U.S. Term Limits. And Chris, I think the Fox piece is absolutely right that while this is, let's be clear, a Democrat shutdown, while Chuck Schumer and others are suggesting that, you know, well, the Republicans have the trifecta and they have the White House and the House and the Senate, they're forgetting that in the Senate, it's a 60-vote threshold to end the government shutdown. And so they are the ones who are effectively causing this shutdown over, you know, illegal immigration, some of those other ridiculous issues. But Trump is, while he's not blinking, he's actually using this to his advantage. But the American people don't really seem to care as much about a government shutdown as, you know, we used to in the past. I mean, it's not really like the leading headline anymore. So what do you make of all this?
Well, good morning, Jenna. I'm just thrilled that President Trump is up there and knows what to do with this shutdown, which is to take away the pork from Democrats. President Trump, one good thing about living in New York for years and years and years, he knows very well that the only thing these Democrat politicians really care about is money. Money for their programs, money to hand out their jobs, money to get their friends jobs as high-paid academic administrators. That's what Democrats care about. And our rhinos have been so weak and useless, frankly, in regard to their political ability to use their power and to take away the money from Democrats and end a lot of this nonsense. I'm on the board of U.S. Term Limits. We want to term limit politicians. But President Trump is effectively term limiting and throwing out a lot of useless, no-show job, essentially, federal bureaucrats. Thank God for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think this is one of the ways that he is showing that he's a negotiator in chief, because he's using this opportunity instead of just pushing back and basically looking like he's beholden to the Democrats and saying, please, please, please end the shutdown. And, you know, we got to go and negotiate with them and whatever. He's just saying, all right, fine. If you guys want to go and pout in the corner, whatever, then I'll use this to my advantage. And that's something that I think the American people, by and large, you know, those of us who actually voted for this administration and said, you know, we want this. This is exactly the kind of thing that is why everyone supported Donald Trump, who did in 2024.
I want to call up to your audience of Christians who are also politically savvy. They're listening to your show. They're learning a lot every time. Your last guest was a great guest, too. And this is about having a sense of proportion. Just like we're America first, and we believe that America ought to lead. We're not to be led by the nose by any foreign nation of any sort. We have our allies, but our allies need to make certain that they are with us. Just like in our politics, we need to make sure that our politicians are with us. I want to urge Christians listening today to take a very close look at their congressman or woman and at their senator and to see, are these people voting like a uniparty member, or are they voting like a Republican that you sent there to get a job done, to cut this overgrown government back and get it to do what we elected President Trump to do and help him do it. Look closely at these people, because there's a lot of them out there in very red states. I can think of Oklahoma. Let's think of Senator Lankford, who attempted to impose his own amnesty scheme with the uniparty and predominantly Democrats over President Trump's head. And these guys skate around and call themselves, you know, good Christians and good Republicans, and it's a lie. So we need to get behind President Trump now and force these rhinos to follow and not cry and whine and act like this government shutdown is the end of the world. It's not.
That is a really great point. And if there are Republicans, and there definitely are, who are just acting, you know, like the typical bureaucratic uniparty, this is the time to call them out. And I think will evidence who is really on the side of America First and who is just trying to go with business as usual. But, you know, it seems like, though, Chris, even when we say these things and everybody's frustrated with the lack of leadership and, you know, the voting and people, you know, like Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, for example, especially in those states, we can never get a primary challenger that would be any better. And so while we say, oh, we need to call them out, it often doesn't actually make any difference. So where can we actually make headway?
Well, you know, I'm doing it in Texas. I've got several people that I've cajoled and pushed and maybe shamed a bit and even probably thrown a few expletives at. To get into the race. These are citizens. A lot of them are people who've made some money. They know how to navigate the system, and they don't necessarily seek out confrontation. But I want our Christians to be confrontational. This is a time to take on the world and to stand up and be counted, especially if you have some resources and you've done well in life and you're finding yourself with your kids raised and in your company in good standing. Get out there and run for office, because that's right, Jenna, you put your finger right on it. We don't have enough good candidates. We have people often that are failed lawyers who want to get into this because it's good for business, and it's pathetic. And these are the same people who never do the right thing when they get in front of a choice where they could make a serious difference in cutting down the size of government, which we've talked about since the 80s. We've been right about that all along. Why has it not substantially happened until now, where we have a complete outsider who came in and is willing to use power? That's another thing I want to get out there. We must use our power when we are in a position to do it, and there's nothing that's wrong with that, or nothing that's not Christ-like. When you're doing the right thing and you're right, that is Christ-like, and we are trying to do the right thing, and we are right. When I talk to young people, I say, look, it's complicated, and there's going to be a lot of people pushing you in other directions. But you know what? We're right and they're wrong.
Amen to that. And I'm speaking with Chris Ekstrom, who is a board member of U.S. Term Limits. And I had to laugh when you said, you know, these are all a bunch of failed lawyers that then end up running for office. It's so true, because I've said for a while, the people who run D.C. and who are the establishment kind of deep swamp, I mean, they are the ones that have no marketable skill set in the real world. I mean, these are people who, if they left D.C., wouldn't have any clue what's going on outside the Beltway. And this is why President Trump, being an outsider and actually coming in and wanting to look at the bloat of Washington, wanting to say, well, why are we still trying to run a playbook that hasn't worked in the last 30 years and is actually doing the business that needs to be done? And why bringing in someone like Elon Musk and with Doge? I mean, these are novel concepts, and everybody on both sides in Washington is panicking about it. And you're absolutely right, Chris, that, you know, these people who are allegedly on Trump's side and on the side of conservatism need to get on board, because we expect opposition from the Democrats, from the leftists, from the people who don't share our values. We expect that. But when it's people that are coming from what should be within our own party or own side, that's the kind of rot that needs to be rooted out. And one of the things that I desperately hope Trump is actually successful at this term that he wasn't in the first is draining the swamp.
Yeah, but Jenna, that's the real big picture here. And I'm going to give a shout out to somebody who's a politician who is and has done the right thing. Now, he's not a perfect man any more than President Trump is, or any more than I am. But Ken Paxton in Texas, He's done a lot, and we didn't have to force him. I got him and helped get him to move on ending this trans crap for kids, for God's sakes. Under 18, he did it. He's gone out and defended Trump when nobody else wanted to do it as an AG. And now he's running against one of the worst rhinos, John Cornyn, the person who, when you ask people, has he done anything? What can you name that he's done? They literally just look at you and laugh and will concede they don't know anything he's done since he's been there for 30 years. And people are not getting behind him. And unfortunately, President Trump hasn't endorsed him, which I'm really, I think is incredible. We need to also, as a group, it doesn't matter what state you live in. If you live in the United States, we got 100 senators. If you live in Oklahoma and you're represented by somebody awful like James Langford, why don't you send a check to Ken Paxton, somebody who is trying to do the right thing and is pushing our values and has actually fought for them? Now, you know, that's just as important as getting citizens and courageous Christians to stand up, be counted, and run for office and go through what is, let me tell you, I ran. It's a humiliation ritual to some degree. But you have to, you know, take yourself on as a servant and a citizen and just say, I'm going to take all this and I don't give a darn because I am trying to do the right thing for America.
Well said, Chris. Well said. And we got to leave it there. But I am with you in that rant, and I'd encourage everyone support the candidates that you know are doing the right thing. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.